שלום, אנחנו קוראים בספר.
Hello, we are reading in the book, the writings of Rabash, volume 2, page 843. The article is, what is the bread of an evil-eyed in the work? You can watch at cam.tv. Selected questions will be asked during the lesson. You can also post your questions there. The writings of Rabash, page 843. Article is, what is the bread of an evil-eyed person in the work?
We are now reading articles in the framework of our preparation for Pesach 2016. We should always try to build a clearer and clearer picture where we are, what Pesach, Passover, means. Passover, meaning we are passing over a certain degree, we're going through a certain state, and how do we enter into this state, and how do we come out of it? Entering into it is considered entering into Egypt. Coming out of it is the exodus of Egypt. What does this give us, all this matter of the exile of Egypt, the Pharaoh, in which we are included, and why do we come out of Egypt, and why specifically thanks to Egypt? And then we have to say that every mitzvah is as a remembrance for the exodus from Egypt. We took something from the Egyptians, and thanks to Egypt we are able to rise more and more, and even all the degrees. This is the meaning of performing mitzvot. And each person is obligated to feel himself as if he came out of Egypt. Why is this matter so important for us? This is the foundation for our entire history, meaning our entire spiritual path. So, with this trend, tendency to build this picture as a whole picture, emotionally, and understanding it, for that we will hear what Rabash tells us.
What is the bread of an evil-eyed person in the work? In the Zohar, Shmot, it is written, Rabbi Chiya started, do not eat the bread of an evil-eyed person, because the bread or the pleasure from that person who is evil-eyed is not worth eating or enjoying. If, when Israel went down to Egypt, they did not taste the bread of the Egyptians, they would not be left in the exile in Egypt, and it would be impossible to harm them. He says there that there is no bad bread in the world except the bread of an evil-eyed person. What does it say? For the Egyptians could not feed the Hebrews bread because it is an abomination to Egypt, meaning they could not see when the Hebrews were eating. Here you have the bread of an evil-eyed person. Thus far, its words. We should understand the prohibition of an evil-eyed, of the bread of an evil-eyed person to such an extent that if Israel had not tasted the bread of the Egyptians, the people of Israel would not remain in exile. This is perplexing. What is the connection between the bread of an evil-eyed person and the exile? Meaning, why does it cause them to be in exile? Meaning that it is a serious prohibition. Is this one of the negative commandments, negative mitzvot, commandments not to do from the Torah or from our sages, for which one deserves exile? To understand this in the work, we have to remember two things, and we have to always keep them in mind. One, the purpose of creation, which is to do good to His creations. This reminds us that we must always achieve perfection and to come to receive the delight and pleasure that there is in the purpose of creation. And before that, a person is regarded as deficient since he has not achieved the purpose of creation, and he is still in the middle of the work. In the words of the Kabbalah, it is regarded as a person having to merit attaining the Naran Chai in the root of his soul. Two, the correction of creation, since disparity of form causes separation. And since man was created in order to be able to receive the delight and pleasure, he must have a desire and craving to receive pleasure. And that will to receive separates him from the root, because the Creator wants to bestow, and the creatures have a desire to receive. This causes separation, which removes the creatures from the Creator. Hence, a correction was made called Tzimtzum and Hester, restriction and concealment, where the creatures cannot feel their root, meaning who created them, before they correct the separation. It is written, and you find how this soul, which is the light of life, dressed in the body, extends existence, from his very essence, as it passes through the four worlds, Abia, it becomes more and more removed from the light of his face, until it comes into its designated kli, called guf, body. And if the light in it is greatly diminished, until its original root is not apparent anymore, yet, by engaging in Torah and Mitzvot in order to bestow contentment upon one's Maker, he purifies his kli called guf until it is fit to receive the great abundance to the full measure that is included in the thought of creation when he created it. Now we can understand that our work is to exit self-reception, meaning for our provision to be from what we provide for the body, so it will be alive and can enjoy life. It will not be from the will to receive for oneself, from enjoying, because it's called an evil eye, meaning that it doesn't want to bestow. Rather, all it wants is to receive for itself. This is called evil-eyed, not wanting to give something to others, but being immersed in self-love. This is called evil-eyed. Therefore, if the food that a person eats, which is called bread, a person must not enjoy this bread because it is the bread of an evil-eyed person, meaning that a person enjoys and eats the bread of an evil-eyed person, meaning that the evil-eyed person enjoying give that this is the person's pleasure, meaning from the will to receive, called evil-eyed enjoying. From this comes all the joy and the good mood that a person receives by it. He doesn't agree to receive it, because this pleasure causes a person to separate from holiness because of the disparity of form. By this we will understand what we asked. Why is there such a serious prohibition on eating the bread of an evil-eyed person, for which Israel remained in the exile? As it says, and if, when Israel went down to Egypt, they had not tasted the bread of the Egyptians, they would not have been left in the exile in Egypt, since the matter of exile is regarded as the people of Israel being unable to work in order to bestow upon the Creator, but only to receive for themselves. This is called the exile in Egypt, when they could not exit their control, but the will to receive for themselves governed. This is why the Holy Zohar says that if, when they went down to Egypt, they would be careful not to eat, meaning not to enjoy the pleasures, the enjoyment of the Egyptians, meaning the evil-eyed, which is the will to receive for himself, they would not fall under their control in the exile. It turns out that the measure, that the seriousness of being evil-eyed is that his bread is entirely in order to receive, and that causes all the separation from holiness. And this is the prohibition on eating the bread of an evil-eyed person, meaning that our whole work in Torah and Mitzvot is in order to come out of the exile of the will to receive for himself. Meaning that we have to aim, when we engage in Torah and Mitzvot, that our reward will be, that by this we'll be rewarded with exiting the exile and enslavement of the will to receive for himself, and we'll be able to work completely in order to bring contentment to the Creator. And we will not ask for any other reward in return for the work in Torah and Mitzvot. Meaning that we want to be rewarded while engaging in Torah and Mitzvot, with feeling that we are serving a great and important King, and that by this we will have the love of the Creator by feeling His greatness. But our whole pleasure will be from serving the Creator. This will be our reward. And not that He will give us some reward for the work. Rather, we will feel that the work itself is the reward. And there is no greater reward in the world than serving the Creator. But the bread of the Egyptians is, in the work, the complete opposite. As it is written, for the Egyptians could not feed the Hebrews bread because it is an abomination to Egypt. Abomination means, the abomination of Egypt is every shepherd, meaning the shepherds were despicable in their eyes. So the meaning is that the Egyptians despised the foods of the food of the Hebrews, because the Hebrews, their bread, meaning their nourishments, were all in order to bestow. And for the Egyptians, all of their bread was evil-eyed, which is to receive. And when they heard that the Hebrews' bread is to bestow, bestowal is despicable and loathsome, because when they have to work in order to bestow and not receive for themselves, they regard this work as despicable and they feel no flavor in it. Therefore, when the Egyptians even heard that they had to work in order to bestow, they would feel that they have to lower themselves, meaning that their reason necessitates that a person should see to his own benefit. And they cannot do anything that does not bring self-benefit. So the body, when it is under the control of the Egyptians, when it hears even the smallest hint of the need to work in order to bestow, the body immediately despises this work and argues that it is still in its full reason and he will not surrender into eating the food of the Hebrews, which to him, this bread is the bread of abomination, because this bread is against reason.
Questions? Yes?
A question by a student from Spain. We're talking about evil-eyed. Is this connected to the evil eye?
No, that's something else. For what reason do we enter Egypt? The will to receive is developing within the creature only in order to bring him to the goal. The goal depends not on the will to receive, rather on the intention in order to bestow that the creature acquires. So the will to receive is large or small, and in what way it seems inside a person is only to the extent in the magnitude, in the shape that a person can acquire the intention in order to bestow on it. That's why the will to receive in itself is something we don't talk about. It makes no difference what actions we make. Some people want to kill other people with knives, and some people are surgeons. They use knives in a respectable way, and they earn a lot of money. Meaning the intention, is it for oneself or for humanity? Meaning the intention determines the action. That's why we have to understand that when we go down to Egypt, it means that we are about to acquire an intention in order to receive. Without this intention in order to receive, we have nothing to correct. That's why all the mitzvot are founded on the remembrance of coming out of Egypt. It's not the magnitude of the will to receive. We sometimes say this, that's the way it is, but we mean by that that if the will to receive has grown, it means that there is an acquisition of the intentions in order to receive. And when one comes towards the end of that exile in Egypt and he has a great will to receive, this means that he has a great will to receive because he has acquired the intention in order to receive. A great one. To such an extent that he sees that he's incapable of being in it anymore. And then the children of Israel sighed because of the work, and he escapes it. But how is it possible that he runs away? He gets the intention in order to receive, and his will to receive grows greater from one day to the other, and the intention is greater every day. And that's how it is all over the world. So why don't we say that the whole world is in the exile in Egypt? Rather, only the people of Israel, meaning people who are Yashar Kel, straight to the Creator, only they are in the exile in Egypt. What's the difference? The difference is that basically a person is constantly struggling. We can say that, for instance, if he's studying, he's in the circle of the society, he does all the actions that the wisdom of Kabbalah demands in order to reach the correction, and he sees that, nevertheless, he becomes worse every day. And despite that, every day he wants to overcome more. He's searching for what bestowal is. He's looking for it. He doesn't understand. He's in darkness, in exile. These are difficult situations because there's no answer yet. There's no understanding, no feeling. He's in pain. He has no justification in his vessels of reception. He doesn't see any profit in his vessels of reception. He doesn't even see any profit in his vessels of bestowal. Because if he receives any profits, it will be receiving in order to receive, or bestowing in order to receive. That's why he's losing from both sides. And exile becomes intolerable. And as he reaches its end, he feels that he can't stand it anymore. Meaning, he agrees to anything. He'll get rid of everything he has in his vessels of reception only to reach the smallest intention in order to bestow. Where does it come from? It comes from an upper force that appears, and it appears to him that he controls, and he can strike Pharaoh, and one is willing to truly bow down, kneel before the Creator. And then he is ready for the exit from Egypt. Because he is willing to give everything, to remain in an empty kli, completely empty, just to belong to the, in order to bestow, to give contentment to the Creator, instead of giving contentment to Pharaoh. Because he sees himself as standing between Pharaoh and the Creator, like Moses. He already separates himself from the exile in Egypt. Gradually, in the beginning, he connects himself to Pharaoh, to the will to receive. Later on, he starts distinguishing himself by the 7 years of hunger from Pharaoh. He runs away from him, returns to him, because only by being between Pharaoh and the Creator, this is called come to Pharaoh. Then he can determine that for him, the Creator is more important than Pharaoh. And he's willing to give up Pharaoh, give up everything. What is Pharaoh? It's the entire vessel of reception with the entire fulfillment. All the fulfillments one can have in the entire reality. He's willing to give that up only to cleave on in one point to the Creator. And this is the meaning of being ready for the Tzimtzum, disconnection from Pharaoh. That's why the exodus from Egypt is considered to be the birth of the soul, when he detaches from the will to receive, from the in order to receive. And this is why the entire work is not about the bread itself, rather the evil-eyed bread, meaning the intention that in order to receive, in order to bestow, that rides over this intention or the other, rides over the will to receive that the Creator has created. So, we should see ourselves going through a process when our will to receive is the kli that was given to us, and all our concern is about the intention this kli has for the sake of the will to receive or for the sake of the Creator. And to see ourselves between them, that we are between the two, that this will to receive is separate from me, and then you can call it Pharaoh, standing on the left side, and the Creator, the force of bestowal, on the right, and I'm in between the two, and I choose what to do. And when I detach from the left and I want to associate myself to the right, this is the first spiritual action. But later on I have to return to the left to receive forces from there, so that I'll have with what to associate myself to the Creator, to the right, in a stronger fashion, in the force of reception. And this is how every time I turn to the left, to the right, to the left, to the right, that's how I use the force of Pharaoh in order to be attached more and more to the Creator. And this is why we should always see ourselves standing between the two. Come to Pharaoh. And so, to scrutinize this situation. and to be cautious. Do not eat the bread of the Egyptians. This means that if it's in order to receive, I don't want to work. The fact that I have to give my body what it needs, there's no problem about it. The question is, for what reason do I fulfill it? This is our work, and this is why, that's why it's very special. And it's misunderstood by people on the outside. I've been asked also,
in my blog,
were Kabbalists throughout history, were they rich? Of course, they were very rich. They were great and rich and powerful, controlling and having many possessions. In ancient times, before the ruin of the Second Temple. Because there's no prohibition about it. The Torah doesn't prohibit that. Rather, it all depends on the intention. So the common people see it according to the will to receive. And Kabbalists look at the intention that rides over the will to receive. And if so, so what is the purpose of creation? To acquire, to conquer the entire reality with the intention in order to bestow. And if a person is looking from the side, he sees this person as if he wants to devour the entire world. They can also say about us, you publish the wisdom of Kabbalah because you want to control the whole world. And they're right. According to the egoistic eye, it seems that way. That's why they're fighting us, they're resisting us, and so forth. However, when Kabbalists look at it, of course, the more possessions you have in order to bestow, it's a correction. This is holiness, because everything belongs to the Creator, and not to the person, not to Pharaoh. Yes, Yaakov, yes.
Can you skip Egypt without beatings?
How? How can one detach the 10 plagues, the 10 blows, are when a person detaches from his will to receive, when he has 10 discernments in him? These 10 discernments are the 10 sefirot. And by the blows, they become 10 sefirot of kedusha, of holiness. When, if it's in order to receive, a person abstains himself from all the blows, and these discernments, these desires become, these sefirot become 10 sefirot of the soul. What does the soul mean? What's the difference between if it's a soul or not a soul? The will to receive in order to receive is called the body. The will to receive in order to bestow is called the soul. That's it. The will to receive is the only thing. It's the only thing created. Yes?
How can the will to receive relinquish? What is relinquishing?
Relinquishing means that the will to receive is matter. And only by the discernments of good and bad, good and evil, regarding the ego, regarding the pleasure or pain, can he say this is better or worse? No. The thing here is, how can the will to receive start being so clever? that it suddenly determines that the intention in order to receive is evil and in order to bestow is good, from receiving candy on the one hand and blows on the other? Do you see? This is the stumbling block in our explanations. We didn't yet reach it. Who is the one scrutinizing? The will to receive, saying, no, here I get blows, this is Pharaoh, I don't want to be with him. For here I get candy, fulfillments, good things, pettings and love, this is the Creator, I love him. If this is the way the will to receive things, he's replacing a cow with a donkey. Meaning there's a special possession here called a force of bestowal. It's not within us, and we can't diagnose it yet or discern it yet, but when a person gets it, this is the meaning of taste and see, for the Lord is good. Only one who can taste it can see it. And this is what we should come close to. And as we receive this quality, this force of bestowal, we see that this, first of all, this is a force we never had, a feeling, a discernment of the taste of it. We didn't previously taste. And now, through it, we can observe reality in a different way. But prior to that, a person doesn't understand what leads him. This force comes by the light that reforms. This is what we should always work for. How to come to this first spiritual discernment that finally will dress in us and give us a different point of view, different eyes by which we can see the world. In the meantime, we're saying, this is good, this is bad, this is good, this is bad, according to our will to receive. So, okay, we're escaping the blows because they're blows. In the society, it's a bit better, a bit more safer, so we run towards that. We come to the wisdom of Kabbalah because the whole world is worth nothing. Meaning, in the meantime, we are replacing a cow with a donkey. Meaning, we're coming to a place which is a bit safer. You have some more hope in this place. As if more, you have some still a value, something is valuable. The whole world is probably worth nothing, so this is worth something. These discernments are still within the will to receive. It's still called the 7 years of satiation. When my will to receive is the one doing the scrutiny, and it ascribes myself more and more to Pharaoh. When the light that reforms starts illuminating a bit more, and starts giving me a tendency in order to bestow, then the children of Israel sigh because of the work. Then the 7 years of hunger begin, and there's the point of Moses being scrutinized in man, and he starts feeling he's standing between Pharaoh and the Creator. We are beginning this period of time. These times can pass very quickly, very quickly. The first period takes a bit more, a bit longer. The second one is shorter.
When the blow comes, are we supposed to see in it something sweet? That request to see the blow as sweet, is this natural? Is what?
If a person aims himself, navigates himself. For instance, I close my eyes, I don't see anything, the world doesn't exist, you don't exist, the world doesn't exist, nothing. So first of all, now I'm preparing myself to be in the right intention, that there's only the Creator, me, and everything that happens inside myself is all Him. And it's all in order to bring myself to His greatness, meaning that His greatness is when I have the intention to be as great as He is. I feel, I act according to Him, not to nullify myself to Him, rather to be as a partner with Him. That's what the Creator wishes for me, from me. And then I open my eyes, and whatever I see in the world, I see as things that, as the verse goes, as the Creator has done for me to work with. Meaning, I have to see the whole world as a disturbance for me, because I can't discover the Creator as He is. Rather, I see the world, and then I have work to do. He has established everything for me, and I have to work with it in order to establish Him instead of the whole world. If this is the way a person sees life, it's just that we have to strengthen ourselves all the time with that, and then you see that you're all the time talking to the Creator. This is the way it's explained everywhere. All right. Yes, Akoka.
In the beginning of the explanation, you said that when we go down to Egypt, we go down to acquire the intention to receive.
You go down to Egypt because there is famine in the will to receive. The will to receive now opens itself more and more. The person starts working in a way that he is about to acquire the intention in order to receive. What is he about to acquire in the intention in order to receive? Spirituality. One comes to study the wisdom of Kabbalah. He wants to acquire the upper world. He wants to reach everything that exists in reality. He wishes to control the Creator. He wants to determine everything by himself. This is the meaning of going down to having the 7 years of satiation. He's doing things right. Everything's okay. He feels himself greater than others. Everything's good for him.
Isn't the intention to receive an automatic intention that everyone is in?
No. No. He doesn't think he's going in order to receive. He's advancing. It's as if he's learning the wisdom of Kabbalah, and all these articles, all the sources. However, in the meantime, he's increasing his will to receive. By that, he increases his intention in order to receive. This is what he wants. He wants it. Tell anyone here that he will come tomorrow and he'll forget all he's learned until today and he'll start from scratch. Will he agree to that? For instance, he's been learning for 5 years already. And he's going to be like Shimon from the market, for instance, so to speak. Of course not. Meaning a person goes and he acquires more and more and more. This is the meaning of 7 years of satiation. This is the meaning of the Egyptians coming to Joseph, to Yosef, and he takes everything from them to the reservoirs, the hardware of Pharaoh, and and everyone's happy about it. And in the 7 years of hunger, he brings back from what he kept. And in short, everything is scrutinized within the will to receive. Yes.
Can the will to receive be without an intention?
No. No. We're not talking about corporeality. where the intention is simple, in order to sustain oneself, and that's it. And then the will to receive and the intention are attached together, cleaved on, glued, like the skin on the flesh. They're attached. Now, if we're talking about a person who already started his spiritual path, when nevertheless the Creator places His hand on the good fortune and He says, take it for yourself. From that moment on, there's already some separation between the skin and the flesh. There's some difference between the intention and the desire. A person starts thinking, well, what about the will to receive, the intention? Is it in order to receive, in order to bestow? Is it for the Creator? What is for the Creator? What is for myself? He starts working with it. It's not him starting to work with it, it's the upper light working over him. Yes.
So what are we acquiring in Egypt? What does it mean that we go down to Egypt to acquire the intention to receive?
Entering Egypt in order to acquire a will to receive with the intention in order to receive, for there to be a great will to receive according to the intention. The will to receive for a person in this world is food, sex, family, money, honor, knowledge. It's small. When a person starts learning Kabbalah, he wants more. He wants to feel the Creator, to know the Creator. He wants a lot. He wants more. He wants eternity, perfection, wholeness, something more. And his will to receive comes to him according to the intention. To the extent that he has an intention in order to receive this in a greater way, his will to receive grows more. And so they grow together. The intention in order to receive along with the will to receive. Now, the question is, this intention in order to receive, is that the only thing growing? No. The intention in order to bestow also grows, but it's still hidden. It's not revealed as the intention in order to bestow, rather it's the man's exertion. That's how it appears. And then he's willing to work because he doesn't see this as an intention in order to bestow. He sees himself acquiring the will to receive, the good Pharaoh, and so forth. Until he starts, and every time the upper light works over him, because he's in a group, he's among, he's as the children of Israel in Egypt. So the upper light works over him, and gradually he reaches a state where the good Pharaoh is replaced by the bad Pharaoh. Meaning he starts seeing his ego, his will to receive, as the enemy, as the hater, as help made against him. He doesn't, well, I don't know how to say it, he doesn't want to run away from it, and he's incapable of running away from it. He starts understanding that in that same will to receive, only if it's corrected in order to bestow, there he will discover the Creator instead of Pharaoh, and there he will basically reach the correction. Yes.
Where does the Creator come in the process of Egypt? Because according to the explanation, it's as if we're going to Egypt in order to acquire the intention to receive.
No. That's wrong.
So where is the intention to bestow?
You enter into Egypt seemingly to reach the purpose of creation, to spirituality. It's only they can't even imagine what spirituality is. They can't depict correctly. And they think that they're about to go to spirituality, but actually what they are doing is acquiring a greater vessel of reception with intention in order to receive. This is the meaning of they left with great possessions. Yes?
So where is the aim to bestow?
Later on, after the reception of the Torah.
What does it mean after the reception of the Torah?
When they're able to be connected as one man in one heart. A group which is not yet able to be as one man in one heart is considered to be under the control of Pharaoh. We are still under the control of Pharaoh. We're not thinking, we're not concerned about connecting our hearts. We're not yet aware, even though we're talking about it a lot, we are not ready, willing to have our points in the heart truly connected. Connected and truly as one point. I don't have this inclination to take my heart out of myself, to rip it out and place it in the center of the group. I don't have it. What can I do about it? Who doesn't give me that? Who doesn't let me do that? That force called Pharaoh. And then we're called the children of Israel in the Egyptian exile. Recognizing the exile, gradually we're starting to understand, to feel that this is not in our favor. We're starting to hate this force that resists the connection between us. That's called Pharaoh. We don't yet really hate this resistance, but we can say that it's the beginning of the 7 years of hunger. Do you understand this state I am now describing? This is our situation, our current situation, that we hear, we can somehow hear that we have to come closer and connect to one heart, one desire. That's where we're all incorporated. That's where we'll attain the Creator and spirituality between us here and now. However, at the same time, we can be calm. Pharaoh calms us down. What does he tell this point in the heart that sometimes jumps or pops? What does he tell Moses and Aaron? Go and calm the people down. Stop making all this noise and fuss and stop waking them up. Yes?
That's exactly what I'm asking about. From where do you bring the inclination to connect the points in the heart? If according to the process we're in now, we're in a process of acquiring the intention to receive. That's the inner inclination.
Even though we are longing for in order to bestow, seemingly, what we are acquiring is more and more intention in order to receive, and our will to receive grows. Our spiritual will to receive. Is Eagle here?
Eagle.
Our actor, Igal. Translating? Okay, so he should think about such a scene for the theater. You have many possibilities to act here between these discernments. Yes?
The intention to bestow, what, does it grow in parallel somewhere, in concealment from the intention to receive? Can you draw like an outline, an axis of development, showing me the intention to receive, and from what point begins the intention to bestow to enter?
From when the upper light starts affecting in a certain way. And then you start feeling that you have a new value for life, which is to be in bestowal instead of reception. With such a tendency to bestow, you, first of all, you get rid of the troubles. So this tendency is egoistic. It's like what the terrorists want. They want the next world immediately. And later on, it's only that for us it's in the opposite way. It's in order to bestow. And later on, you get the feeling of the will to bestow. It's not that it gives you freedom and you get rid of all the troubles, all your problems, you fly the air, and you have like a young fellow with all these imaginations, adventures, as you're in the air somewhere. No, that's not what the will to bestow gives you. Rather, it gives you an ability to bestow contentment to the Creator, and by that you start developing. When you don't want to see the results, rather only to be certain that you are doing it. Well, at this, a new kli is forming, is starting to form. I'm telling you, all your questions are about not yet feeling the result of the, or because you don't yet feel the result of the effect of the light that reforms. And here it's like an ox to the burden and a donkey for the load. You have to work until the upper light brings the entire required correction, and then a person somehow starts understanding with a new mind what he's going through. All these tendencies you're asking about, understanding it in the corporeal mind, understanding the spiritual idea in the corporeal mind, it won't go. It won't happen. That's why we have to continue. That's it. Strengthening society will give the forces, by the upper light will affect more, and to continue, keep on. Yes, Vlad.
He says here, we have to exit the will to receive for ourselves, so we can work in order to bring contentment to the Creator, and that we don't want any other reward for our work in Torah and Mitzvot.
Yes.
It's like this is the biggest incentive to bestow to the Creator. That determines everything.
Yes, but you can't feel it in your will to receive, the corrupted will to receive. Only in the will to bestow that will come to you and will correct you, and then you'll feel it in it. We must receive a new kli, a new discernment, a new heart, a new mind. Different, with new discernments, with new measures that don't exist in humanity. We're still working with that, with the same kli as humanity. It's only that the values are a bit different. But basically we're on the same side as the entire humanity. Moti.
Why this invitation to come to Pharaoh comes from the Creator, not from the creature? The creature wants to get rid of the will to receive and move on. So why?
No, because he's afraid, the creature, to face all these problems. Do you know what problems a person has? It's nothing if you look on it later on, but for the time being, this is something terrible. The Creator knows how to show such fears, such shames to a person that he'd rather be dead than alive.
Let's make it simple. It's impossible to get rid of, to move on without the blows.
The blows should be over Pharaoh, not Moses, Aaron, and the people of Israel in man.
Yes, but for now, Moses isn't detached from Moses. You know, he was playing with his beard. He sat on his lap. So we're still in Egypt, and we feel the blows.
Oh, don't confuse yourself with the words written, interpreting it this way.
But we feel the blows. So how can we agree and consciously not draw the reforming light? We know that it corrects and influences, but completely consciously, we know it promotes us. We justify.
Everything depends on the preparation. As I said before, that if I go out to the world, or if I come to the lesson, and before each and every moment I should shut my eyes and depict the there's none else besides Him, the good that does good, then I open my eyes, I see the world, as this is what I should bring to my feeling, my cognition, that there's none else besides Him, the good that does good. The Creator clothes Himself on this.
We justify all the pains we went through, but it's hard for us to ask about tomorrow.
It's a sign you're not justifying.
But I do justify the past.
No. How come? If whatever I've went through, I've received a reward for it, and it covers all my exertion and my troubles, then I should ask that whatever happens, I'm willing.
How do you get to it?
However, not them and not their salary. What's greater, the salary or the exertion?
The exertion.
Exertion. Then you certainly want nothing. None of it. For me, the reward is greater. I'm willing to tolerate everything if it means I'll reach the right state.
But isn't the reward the work itself?
No, that's later on, when I already understand that the reward is the exertion itself. But in the meantime, when you say that I don't want it, I want to get rid of the work. Listen to your words.
How do you get to the state that the Rabash did like that, you know, let it suffer?
Only by integration. Integration with the friends and the reforming light. Yes.
We say that the wisdom of Kabbalah is a type of science. Unlike religion, which is based on belief.
Yes, psychology of spirituality.
But because I have no grip on this whole matter of bestowal,
yes,
where are my the critical points where I can know that I'm on the way, that I'm in the right direction, that I'm doing something, or is it all kinds of a type of imagination, this whole thing?
How can I know that I'm advancing?
Yes.
You have no possibility. You cannot measure that. By what kelim?
That's the question.
That's right.
So how does it reconcile with it being a science and that we treat it with scientific tools?
It's exactly because it's a science. That's why if you don't have any device to measure where you are, you don't know where you are, like a scientist looking for some new results, new phenomena. He's examining, he's measuring, but he doesn't know where he is. He knows, he sees it's new, but he didn't yet find the connection between the different phenomena. He can't yet put it into a formula or explanation. Yes, we too are there. We're in the middle of the path. The entire science is built over walking in darkness until you discover sufficient phenomena and you can connect between them and find the formulas and explanations. That's the way 99% of the life of scientists is a search in darkness. Only later, when they have sufficient phenomena, results, where they have the statistics and so forth, they start processing it and they see that they have a new formula between the different parts of nature that are connected this way between themselves and so forth.
On the one hand, there's a strong feeling that this is the thing, that there's the reforming light, that we're looking for the quality of bestowal, that everything that happens here is the most real thing in reality.
Yes.
But yet there's nothing empirical that I can come and show and prove.
To prove to someone? No. For yourself? Well, for yourself, you can do it to the extent that you are detached from the world to receive, and you rise above it, above your nature, and you become an expert, independent of your own ego. And then if you accept this assumption that there is a will to receive, the will to bestow, and so forth, then you can more or less determine the process you're going through.
So it's like an experiment where we assume that this is what we have to find, and now we're on the way to prove it.
Well, you can also be right now like a scientist, but don't attach yourself to your will to receive. Rise above your will to receive. Look at yourself from the side. Examine to what extent you're suffering, how much you're receiving, how much you're included in the group. Start being like a psychologist, a true psychologist, a scientist, not corporeal psychology, rather spiritual one. Start trying to measure how much you're using your will to receive, kilograms, resistance, and you can start building all these things. But I'm saying again, it all depends, it's all on the condition that you see yourself from the side. Go ahead. If you detach yourself from your ego, from yourself, and you observe yourself from the side, like Moti said, that the Rabbah said, let it suffer about himself. This way, you can be a true scientist. But, nevertheless, even though you are a scientist, you're still missing data. You're still in the middle of the road. You didn't yet collect enough data in order to start organizing them in a certain way, as a science. When you start doing that, this means that you have the will to receive, the masach, the screen, the reflected light, ochozer, and the pleasure. And then you can truly examine. You check how you open and you close your desire so that the upper light can spread in you, and to what extent, so it will be exactly in order to bestow, and you'll feel how it enters and exits, but you'll control it. This is true science. However, in the meantime, you can nevertheless somehow depict it. If you want to advance towards that, towards what Kabbalists tell us, so we are attracted, we're impressed by it, we get some illumination from it.
And how can I explain scientifically that very powerful sensation there is, that although there is nothing empiric, you can prove it, but still, it is there. How can I explain it as something scientific?
Explain it to people. In a way that's detached from reality, and they can say, yes, let's say it. Let's assume. Let's assume this exists. And then in this way you can explain your theory, your hypothesis.
But how can I explain it to myself?
Like a scientist that explains before he has any proof, more or less. I mean, you have some clues for it in our world, but you explain it like a scientist who discovered a certain phenomena by yourself, and then you cannot even prove it to others. Or maybe you didn't even discover it for yourself yet.
And that phenomenon is a part of the quality of bestowal, what I had discovered myself. This is a remnant of the quality of bestowal, some kind of an impression of it.
Yeah, but he can't explain to them what is the attribute of bestowal.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about how can I show myself that I'm not mistaken? How can I explain myself that sensation without getting into...
I can't. Because you don't feel what is the meaning of bestowal in order to bestow. The attribute of bestowal is a result of the light that reforms. It clothes in a person, then a person understands. It's a new attitude towards life.
So what brings me here every morning and my attraction towards my friends and my clear knowledge that you're a man of truth and you're not selling me any stories? What does it mean?
This is the light that works in you and obligates you to act this way, out of the desire to receive that works in you.
This is the influence of the light over the will to receive, but this is not bestowed yet.
Of course not. You wish to know. This can only happen after revelation. after redemption, the Creator is revealed. To that extent, you can know. The letter Aleph that's added to exile, Galut,